Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Wednesday, December 15th, 2010. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Little agitated today, folks. Little agitated today. Had a difficult morning. Started off, you know, when you have a five-year-old daughter and she comes home from kindergarten, they don't like to tell you anything about what they've been doing. You don't hear anything about, like, yeah, how's school? I don't know. What'd you do today? I can't remember. That is the classic line. And normally I would attribute it to, not so much me being a bad parent, but my wife being a bad parent. But I've heard this from other parents of five-year-olds. The other day, Milo said something to the effect of, like, these kids don't like me or whatever it is. And so I was telling her, you know, when I was in kindergarten, it was very hard for me to deal with other kids. And she just looks at me and she goes, I bet. I'm like, what do you mean? I bet. Do you want to, then she just walks off. I don't know if she knows what I bet means, or if she doesn't know what that means, or if she's basically just saying, you must have had trouble dealing with other children. I was a bit of a contrarian when I was younger. I know that's hard to imagine right now. And then I spent literally an hour and a half on the phone today with PayPal because they froze my account. Because they didn't have the information that they wanted from me. It was an incredibly annoying process. And as I tend to get aggressive. First of all, there are some folks who have a problem with PayPal because of WikiLeaks. And, you know, frankly, I'm not convinced. You know, I'm exploring other ways in which to take money, frankly. I'm not going to lie about that. But it won't affect you in any way. If we do it, it'll be a very seamless process. Don't worry about it, but I was getting a little agitated with the customer service guy. He was perfectly polite, and I was trying to be perfectly polite, right? You heard, Evan.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just being a little bit aggressive at one point, because after an hour and 15 minutes, they're holding my money hostage. And I would say things like, excuse, let me just ask you, is what you're doing, do you think it's blackmail, or is it more accurately described as extortion? Because you can't take people's money, then say we're not going to transfer it to your bank account until you give us more information. Why didn't you tell me that up front? That's the issue. You didn't tell it to me before. Only 20 minutes after you say, okay, we've sent your money to your bank account. Now, you know, for the most part, it's moot because it's theoretically going towards Dorsey and Evan. So don't take it out with me, guys. But then the customer service guy says, listen, I'm familiar with your radio show, and I know who you are, and, you know, I apologize that you're going through this. And I was just like, oy. Then, you know, I felt guilty that, you know, it's much easier to do this anonymously. Like, boy, that John Doe was a real sort of dick today on the phone. It's just one more dick, but this guy's going home going, yeah, well, that Sam Cedar we used to listen to on IMR. Yeah, he turns out to be a real sort of aggressive prick. It's almost as if what Nixon said about the Jews being abrasive and obnoxious was true. Now, I mentioned this story 2 days ago when it first broke. The new Nixon tapes that are out, And I've seen many people in the media focus on what it reveals about Richard Nixon. Now, what it reveals about Richard Nixon is nothing. We all knew that he was a racist, anti-Semitic lunatic. But what really continues to impress me was what Henry Kissinger had to say on these tapes. And Christopher Hitchens, who has been a longtime Kissinger critic, believes he's a war criminal. And one would, it's very hard to disagree based upon Henry Kissinger's actions. But Christopher Hitchens' point is that Henry Kissinger should have the door shut in his face by every decent person and should be shamed, ostracized, and excluded. No more dinners in his honor, no more respectful audiences for his absurdly overpriced public appearances, no more smirking photographs with hostesses and celebrities, no more soliciting of his worthless opinions by sycophantic editors and producers. One could have demanded this at almost any time during the years since his role as the only unindicted conspirator in the Nixon Watergate gang, and since the exposure of his crimes and crimes against humanity in Indochina, Chile, Argentina, Cyprus, East Timor, and several other places. But the latest revelations from the Nixon Library might perhaps turn the scale at last. And he is talking about a specific quote of Henry Kissinger's. So much so, and it's about Jews. Henry Kissinger, a Jew, has a comment about Jews. So much so that the Anti-Defamation League, which I will tell you, the Anti-Defamation League is a worthless organization. It has completely destroyed its own credibility, particularly with the whole mosque debacle, where it participated in the defamation of an entire religion. Probably because it's pushed now, and my guess would be it's funded completely by hardcore right-wingers. And then any credibility this organization once had is out the window because its leader, it's Abe Foxman, the ADL national director, has completely impeached his credibility. The Anti-Defamation League said a 1973 discussion between President Richard Nixon and his top foreign policy advisor at the time, Henry Kissinger, released as part of the Nixon tapes, shows, quote, a disturbing and even callous insensitivity towards Soviet Jews, quote, but should not change history's verdict on the important contributions and ultimate legacy of Kissinger. Now, what Kissinger has to say is so disturbing, so appalling. Frankly, regardless of what your ethnic background is or race, but particularly, I would imagine, for the Jewish Anti-Defamation League. But Abe Foxman goes on to say, based on previously released tapes, a clearer picture of President Nixon has emerged as a man acutely infected with anti-Semitism, who was surrounded by close aides and staff who reinforced those bigoted beliefs. But does he blame Kissinger for this very promotion? No, because Henry Kissinger is a right-winger, and the ADL is obviously funded by the right wing. The anti-Jewish prejudice which permeated the Nixon presidency and White House undoubtedly created an environment of intimidation for those who did not share the president's bigotry. Kissinger was not immune. But Hitchens responds, in the past, Kissinger has defended his role as enabler to Nixon's psychopathic bigotry, saying that he acted as a restraining influence on his boss by playing along and making soothing remarks. Well, let's go to the tape. Let's see. You decide. You decide if what Kissinger is saying here is acting as a restraining influence on his boss by playing along and making soothing remarks. You decide. Now, understand these tapes are in bad shape. So, to play the part of Henry Kissinger, to read the exact quote verbatim, without any changes whatsoever, so that this can be heard clearly, will be the actress comedian Sarah Silverman. Let's roll that tape now.
The emigration of Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy. If they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern. Maybe it's a humanitarian concern.
So there we hear from Kissinger, played by Sarah Silverman. The emigration of Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy. And if they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern. Maybe a humanitarian concern. One has to wonder, if that is your thinking, whether you're a Jew or not, what would achieve the level of a humanitarian concern? Hey, put them in the oven, you put them in the gas chamber, hey, it's not, hey, it's right on the fence. We don't know. I want you to listen to that Kissinger tape just one final time. Play it now.
The emigration of Jews from the Soviet Union is not an objective of American foreign policy. If they put Jews into gas chambers in the Soviet Union, it is not an American concern. Maybe it's a humanitarian concern.
You know, it's one thing to have Sarah Silverman host award shows, which I think is actually perfectly legitimate. It's another to actually treat Henry Kissinger like he is a civilized human being. So thank you, Sarah Silverman, for that wonderful rendition. Tax deal. The tax deal is looks like it's happening, folks. We're not going to have a guest today, incidentally. I should tell you right up front so that you're not. But we will take a break in a couple of minutes, just to so I can take a breath. Tax deal apparently is going to go through. I put a post up on Huffington Post of the which went with the audio we played from NPR the other day, where Obama talked about Social Security being a particular problem in terms of our deficit, which is just absurd. It's just absurd. I mean, it is an incredibly disturbing statement, because Social Security does not contribute $1 to the debt or deficit, not $1. If you're a right-wing nut job and you want to believe that it's completely broke, because all that's in there are U.S. Treasury bonds that pay interest and backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, that's one thing. That just means you're a loon. But if you claim that Social Security contributes to the deficit, you're a liar. And this tax deal, this 2% tax holiday on Social Security, which supposedly expires in a year, which is going to be very difficult, of course, to allow to expire. Chris Hayes put it very well on a countdown, I think it was last night, was that in a year or two, when these things come up for expiration, either the economy is still going to be doing bad, in which case the Republicans will argue, you can't raise taxes when the economy is doing this bad. Or the economy is going to be doing better, in which case the Republicans are going to say, see, it's working. You can't. You got to keep it. When we know the stimulative effects of these tax cuts are going to be somewhat minimal, that to the extent that there's anything that's very stimulative in this package, it's really going to be more about the unemployment benefits. And it's going to be hard to keep those renewed at that point once you've given away all your leverage. And now the liberals in the House are beginning to cave as well. Representative Peter Welch from Vermont, who a week ago circulated a letter signed by 54 Democrats urging opposition to the deal, now says the die is cast. It's academic, okay? The bottom line is it's a fast-moving train that's become clear, and Washington is doing what it is easy finding, finding easy to do. And maybe there'll be enough conservatives who are upset at the deficit that this will scuttle this deal, but it doesn't look good. And, of course, the trap here is to say, this is increasing the deficit. It's completely irresponsible, when, in fact, the deficit's not the issue here. The issue is this is a waste of money, period. There are much better ways, much more effective ways to stimulate the economy than to giving any of these tax cuts, any of them. Any of them. And the sanctimony of those people who would say that it's an appalling idea to raise the taxes on those people making under $40,000 a year. What? Save your self-righteousness and your sanctimony for the money that we're spending on killing civilians around the world. Save your sanctimony for that. Save your sanctimony for actually stimulating the economy. Because I got news for you. Those people are being so sanctimonious now, and I have a couple in my mind that I'm thinking about. I didn't hear them so animated when it came to the trillions we were going to spend on a lie. Trillions we were going to spend killing civilians and innocent people on a lie. Or that we continue to do it in Afghanistan. The lie being, in this case, that we can actually achieve something. And I hope these people have the same level of sanctimony when the Social Security gets cut. My guess is they won't. Because we've talked about the different levels, the different quintiles and how much they rely on Social Security, right? If you're in the bottom 20% of income in this country, you rely 83% as a senior citizen on Social Security for your income. 80% if you're in the second quintile from the bottom 40%. If you're in the third quintile from the bottom 60%. Which is really not actually the bottom. I mean, you could also argue that's, you know, the vast majority of people. You're no longer at the bottom of anything. You rely on it, I think it was 60%, some odd. 80%, I think you're down now, that second quintile, I think it's actually 43%. And then it drops down to like 17% if you're in the top. Quintile, 20%. So, this is a massive cave. It really is. You know, I think, do I still believe that the Democratic Party remains the best vehicle for any type of genuine progressive change in this country on a national level? Yes, I do. But that's a very depressing statement. That's an extremely depressing statement. You know, you can look around and you say, well, this thread remains the best way, the best chance we have to pull this piano up these stairs. You don't have many options, folks. And unfortunately, that's where we are right now. And then the question is, you know, I think, frankly, it is a perfectly legitimate question at this point. Is it really worth, the presidency in 2012, if, and this is a big if you can get a return in terms of a more progressive Democratic Party. Now, it didn't work out this way in 2000. I can tell you that right now. It didn't work out. It went the other way. But I don't know if there was a conscious decision to screw that up. I mean, 500,000 more people, half a million more people voted for Al Gore. And say what you will about Ralph Nader, there was no concerted effort that to lose that election. So I don't know. These are all things that are in play. We have plenty of times to discuss these things. But, I mean, clearly the real problem that we have in this country and is that our entire political leadership in this country, to some degree or another, and I think I feel very comfortable saying this about just about every single Republican. I don't feel comfortable saying it about every single Democrat. But certainly the leadership, our political leadership in this country, is completely beholden to moneyed corporate interests. I just don't think it's possible to argue otherwise. And this presents a different problem than the one that I think that we have been operating under. The one that we thought existed. This is a different problem. I mean, this is something over the years that we've, you know, I certainly have addressed. And I've always perceived that 30% of the Democratic Party was bought and wholly owned a subsidiary of corporate America. And unfortunately, if it's still just 30%, and it could be more, they seem to control the party. And that's very problematic. And I don't know what the solution is. I don't think it's Barack Obama going and kissing ass right now to corporate leaders. I mean, it's comedic. It's comedic. Why aren't you laughing? Oh, I know I can change that. There you go. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I hate to... Oh, fuck. Ah! Sorry. Oh, please. Please, come. Settle down. He's going to meet with... I don't even have the story. Do I really need to tell you the story? Do I really need to tell you the story? I mean, there is a really sort of an astonishing sort of acute failure at politics, sort of coupled with a large desire to do the will of corporate America. I mean, I'm not buying the notion that Obama is weak. I mean, I'm not saying that he's nefariously trying to project a weakness and getting to the results that he wants. I don't think he thinks he's projecting a weakness. I do think that he is quote unquote compromising to get to an end that he is perfectly fine with. To the extent that there's anything that is disingenuous, I think he just simply overstates the tax cuts for the rich, that he has a problem with it. I think he overstates that for political purposes. I don't think that, you know, given his druthers, he may not. I just don't think it's that relevant. And, you know, to him, from a policy standpoint, you know, frankly, it's not that relevant to me as a policy standpoint. You want to extend those Bush tax cuts on the wealthy for another 2 years? Do it. It's a waste of money. But to then, on the other side of that, say we have a deficit problem, which you're going to use as the fulcrum from which to begin to impose austerity on the middle class, forget the middle class, on 90% of this country. That's when it becomes insidious and despicable. And so then we hear, even before this deal has gone through, and maybe, you know, and I can't figure out, Corker, Senator Bob Corker, Republican from Tennessee, goes on the TV. Do you have the audio for that? Let's play this audio. Listen to what he's saying now. Understand, the deal's not even done yet. Or at least passed, although everybody seems to have completely, even the vocal left in the House seems to have said, eh, it's over.
I think you're going to see people, I'm already talking with folks on both sides of the aisle, I think you're going to see resistance to voting for the debt ceiling increase later this spring without us doing something that is real as it relates to all of these issues you're talking about. I think there's momentum building for that. I'm trying to develop with others a critical mass to make sure we do not raise the debt ceiling without making sure we've cut expenditures and broadened the base in some way. So I don't think we've kicked it down the road.
There you go, folks. In that mass of gobbledygook that he said, he A, starts with the premise, okay, now that we have stripped the Democrats of any leverage in the House, now that we need nothing from them in terms of tax cuts for our wealthy donors, we're going to go and pretend that we would actually have the audacity to not raise the debt ceiling, something that Republicans did five times under their control during the Bush administration. Something that if they do not do, will immediately create a financial world meltdown that makes the banking meltdown look like tiddlywinks. For the first time in the history of the United States, they would cause the United States to default on their loans. They will never, ever, ever, ever do this. We had Chris Hayes on the show a week or two ago saying he would love to see Nancy Pelosi march over there and say, we've heard you loud and clear. We listened to the Tea Party. We're not going to vote to raise the debt ceiling. That's your responsibility in the House. And let them deal with it. Because I got news for you. It would take about 30 seconds before anybody at the Chamber of Commerce thought the Republicans were serious about not raising the debt ceiling, for the full brunt and force. You know, that guy in Network, right? Ned Beatty comes in with his sunglasses or whatever. Maybe I'm confusing him in both in that Paul Newman movie. And whatever, it doesn't matter. Forces of nature. So they bring up this debt ceiling, threaten a financial apocalypse unless we get some work on the expenditure side. Now, do you think that expenditure side is going to come from the Defense Department? The Defense Department that has a budget that dwarfs? It's not even dwarfs. That is greater than double the entire aggregate of every country in the world's Defense Department budget. Do you think that's where the cuts are going to come from? Or do you think now that the House is about to settle on this deal where Social Security wage taxes, the taxes that fund Social Security separate from the deficit and the budget, separate from the general fund, now that they're on a tax holiday and are getting made up in the Social Security Trust Fund from the general fund, money flowing to the general to the Social Security tax trust fund. Do you think they're going to say, "Hey, look, Social Security draining now, draining the general fund. Time to cut it." Do you think? What do you think the chances of that happening are? Zero. It's unbelievable. Senate Democrats have delayed their vote on the tax deal to this afternoon. House Democrats are going to get some estate tax change and a portion of it. It's chicken feed. If they wanted to wait, they could let the estate tax go up to 55% over $675,000. See how quick you can get the Republicans to the table to renegotiate that. The $858 billion package. Remember, I don't think our deficit is an issue right now, but every single media commentator, every single liar in the House and the Senate, the president say, this is our big problem. This is the biggest problem we face in this country. Well, this $858 billion tax break package that doesn't build a single road, doesn't build a single rail tile, doesn't build a single power plant, that doesn't add, doesn't build a school, doesn't build, pay for a teacher, that does nothing to invest in the future of this country. This $858 billion package does more damage to the deficit, increases the deficit greater than anything, any other piece of legislation passed during the Obama presidency. Bigger than all of it. I got to take a break. War on Christmas is on, folks. The war on Christmas is on. We're gonna do a. One of these days, maybe the days that we're off, we'll play the what I consider my best moment on television. And it was a war on the Christmas debate. I mean, you know, these things are sort of inconsequential, but I had an opportunity to really fuck with the medium in a way that I really rarely have the opportunity to do.
I got you a listener by showing that video to somebody.
I don't doubt it. Unfortunately, it's going to be a little bit depressing for the because it's all downhill from there. I mean, they're going to be like, let's go. Started with dessert. But here's Sarah John Kyle. This now, again, there's a lot of kabuki here. I guess they're going to try. Well, the House is going to vote on the standalone Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. I imagine it's going to pass in the House. Supposedly, there's 60 votes in the Senate. And supposedly, Harry Reid is going to keep everybody there. He's now talking about. Now, you technically have, I think, until January 4th. I think this Congress can be in session until January 4th. But it's just been tradition that they leave, sometime around now, take a couple of weeks off. I don't have that on my 360, but I guess maybe we should have a little bit of Tevye. It's tradition. Well, this tradition's going out the window. Dorsey, do you know what I'm referring to?
No.
I didn't think so. Great. Evan, do you?
No, again. Yeah,
I got to get more good Jews in here. Yeah, start whistling tradition from the most famous Broadway.
Fiddler on a Roof?
That's correct, sir.
Close.
Thank you. You get a cookie. Not a real cookie, of course. A fake cookie. Senator John Kyle says that Harry Reid wants to bring the Senate back after Christmas. Last year, I guess they did it right up until the moment of Christmas Eve. And Rachel had a good piece on this last night, Rachel Maddow. I don't know why I refer to her Rachel, like I'm dropping her name. But I mean, I know her. I know her enough to say hello. If I, you know, but I don't see her. But be that as it may. And now I can't say be that as it may without thinking about someone saying, who says it more, you or Janine? She mentioned that this went, it went to the wire again because the only leverage that the Democrats seem to have is basically holding the Republicans in session. Because everybody just wants to leave. And of course. This must be done before you leave. Oh, shit, really? Now, I'm not exactly sure why they are compelled to stay. Other than if they think there's some political price to pay for skipping certain votes. But a lot of these guys, I don't think there's much price to pay to skip Don't Ask, Don't Tell. But be that, having said that, this is John Kyle. It is impossible to do all the things that the majority leader laid out, Kyle said. And frankly, without disrespecting the institution and without disrespecting one of the two holiest of holidays for Christians and the families of all the Senate, not just the senators themselves, but all the staff. Of course, Harry Reid. Anti-Christian. Anti-Christmas. Get your work done, John Kyle. Working through Hanukkah. It's not really a holy holiday. I'd be pissed too, frankly. I would be pissed too. If I, you know, celebrated Christmas. Myla is in a dual language program at her public school. And it's awkward because she's starting to talk about the three kings and the baby Jesus. Because it's very, you know, it's very, I guess, like culturally speaking, for a lot of Spanish speakers in this country, it's all about three kings. And she doesn't say, I said, you're talking about baby Jesus? No. Jesus. Okay. It's completely befuddled. Neither Nikki nor I have any, all right. She's holding a baby Jesus, but I don't think she gets that it's Jesus. It's weird. I mean, it's weird to me. I don't mean to denigrate anybody's, the thing with the three kings and they give the frankincense and myrrh. Is that what it is?
Yeah,
or is it rosemary and thyme? Parsley, sage, and rosemary and thyme, right? Isn't that?
That's Paul Simon.
Right.
The
Senate has overseen the slowest pace of judicial staffing in at least a generation, writes Ryan Grimm, with a paltry 39.8% of Obama's judges having been confirmed, according to numbers compiled by Senate Democrats. This is what it's always been for me, folks, is the judiciary. That's why I wanted Al Gore to win at that time, even though I was slightly disenchanted with the Democratic Party as being too corporatist at that time. For me, it was the Supreme Court. Looks like we got there just a little bit too late for Al Gore. And, of course, we're not talking Supreme Court here. We're talking on the appellate and the circuit district levels. 39.8% of Obama's judges having been confirmed. That is compared to, of the 103 district and circuit court nominees, only 41 have been confirmed. 41. By this time, in GW's presidency, the Senate had confirmed 76% of his nominees, almost twice. Clinton was 89% at this point in his tenure. Obama's nominating pace also lags behind his predecessors. He has 103 total nominations as opposed to 142 by Clinton, 130 by Bush. Reagan had 87 confirmations by this point. George W. Bush had moved 70 judges through Democratic-controlled Senate. In other words, widespread failure to capitalize on. And yes, the Senate is a broken institution. I get that because, of course, the Republicans completely. You know, there was a story. I was traveling in Australia as a young man. somebody was explaining to me the difference between America and Australia. And apparently there, and I believe it still remains, in the game of cricket, and you're doing like a three-day test match. Like normally cricket just goes on and on and on until it's over. There is no, it's like a, you know, as if like a nine-inning game could go, and it goes like days. But in a test match, there's a specific number of days. And, you know, forgive me, my British and post-colonist friends, if I get cricket wrong. But my understanding was that when the test match started, it's 4 days and out. You're out at 4 days. It could end in a tie, but, you know. So you at one point, you could run out the clock. In other words, you could actually, as a pitcher, roll the ball in and make it almost impossible for the batting team to make up the difference, and you would just run out of time. And there was an infamous game where the Australian team in Australia did this. And, you know, these cricket stadiums, 70,000 people, started to boo their own team mercilessly for doing this. They were ashamed. It was contrary to the notion of the game, even though they would win. Now contemplate that in the context of America, of American sports. What they were doing was not illegal. Now, there was no codification of, like, this is poor sportsmanship. It was simply decided by everybody watching, like, this is not how you play the game. Wow. Now, American society, it's impossible to imagine that. It really is impossible to imagine it. On the contrary, moments like, you know, the guy comes out, and I'm a Pats fan, so I'm just like, this is awesome. That dude who was on parole or was like a convict who was, you know, at halfway house comes out and snow plows against the, I think it was the Dolphins for that field goal. I was like, yeah, man. Are you shitting me? That's awesome. It's home field advantage, dude. Suck it up. And I think I've told the story that one of the ways I made money in Australia, I realized this when we were going to, I was hanging out with a bunch of drunks selling hot dogs. And we all went in the morning. Did I tell this story about how we all went to a movie theater? Because it was Tuesdays, it was like half price. And at that time in Australia, like the movies were $11, which was a lot more than they were in the United States. But it was $11 Australian. And we showed up there. We realized it's not half price Tuesdays. But you could buy a book of coupons for 11 tickets for the price of 8. So you pay $80, let's say, and you get 11 tickets. And normally it would cost you 110. And there was like 6 of us. So we all went in. And then after we came out, we sold off the rest of them, of the coupons. And we didn't make any money back. We made a buck or two. But or maybe we did this before we went in, because I remember the movie was Crossing Delancey, and I could not focus on the movie. All I was thinking, because I was broke, I was just traveling around, I was like, wait a second. What's to keep me from doing this? Like, there is no place in America where this would happen. There is no movie theater that would sell you a coupon book for 11 tickets at the price of 8. You can't. It doesn't happen. Because every single person would go out and resell these tickets. And so that's what I did. I went out. I resold. I would make $32 in 15 minutes. Buying a packet of coupons and going back into line, thinking like they're gonna bust me. There's no way. How could they not have figured this out? I'm gaming the system. It's just like nobody in Australia would like think to do it. Like I went up to, you know, and I got nervous. I thought I'm gonna get deported or whatever it was. And I went up to like the counter and I was like, hey, is it all right if I give these to my friends? Sure. What if they give me money back just to pay me back? Yeah, sell them for all we fuck all care. What? Are you serious? But this notion of win at all costs, that's the way it's played in America. And somehow our political class, and really I'm talking more almost a journalistic establishment, the so-called centrist and left journalistic establishment in this country, because I think much of the lack of the Democratic leadership's ability to see this could also be a function of not seeing it also dovetailed with the other agenda, the other corporate agenda that they were fulfilling. That the Republican Party has no sense of ethics. They have no sense of Senate comedy. And I mean that, like, you know, friendliness, collegiality, not comedy, comity. And so the idea that they would take the filibuster, which was basically regulated by just sort of good taste in the past. First, you remember when George Bush was putting up judicial nominees, they were saying the idea of a filibuster is so extra constitutional that we will pull the nuclear weapon and get rid of the entire thing. We'll drop the nuclear bomb and get rid of the entire thing. And a somber group of 14 had to meet in the middle to empower Joe Lieberman and dispel the use of this so that we could get right-wingers on the bench who then say that corporations are individuals and therefore can fund essentially campaigns to the tune of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars without any disclosure whatsoever. In a complete unfettered way. So that's the Republicans, you know, 6-8 years ago. And then under Obama, they have used the filibuster, you know, something like by a factor of 4 more times than have ever been used in the past. And have completely stopped any legislation from going forward. And they've been allowed to do this with impunity because we have a completely ineffectual press and an equally ineffectual Democratic Party, aided and abetted by a completely ineffectual press. And at the same time, you still have had like this notion on the liberal establishment that, look, you know, there are certain ways of doing things. There's certain right things. Okay, they're holding us hostage, but we must, for the good of the country, we must concede. And maybe at one point they'll realize that there's no conceding to these people. You know, this is the line of argument that you hear right-wingers talking about Islam. You can't negotiate with these Muslim countries. You can't negotiate with... But the difference here is that the number of extremist Muslims within the 1.6 billion worldwide Muslim community is almost immeasurable without a calculator. Like, you know, the number of zeros that must follow that decimal point when we're talking about Muslim extremists versus the number of zeros that precede the decimal point when we're talking about the Republican Party. I mean, is there a single individual in the Republican Party who is even remotely reasonable, who is not completely incentivized to simply win at all costs? Name that person. Name it. I mean, Dick Lugar on START Treaty, wow, he's very reasonable. He's very reasonable. He is supportive of the treaty that Ronald Reagan wrote. Or didn't write, but written underneath him, or during his time. So, I mean, this is the situation we're facing, where our president is now going to kiss the ass of corporate America, while 70% of Americans, 70%, more than 70%, say that bonuses should be taxed on Wall Street. You don't think there's some anger there? And meanwhile, Katrina Vandenheuvel points out the other day that despite the fact that we as taxpayers, the U.S. government, not Ayn Rand's Atlas or Shrugged or, you know, Richard Galt or whoever that character is, he wasn't the one that bailed out the banks. These anarchists on the right. These fake anarchists. I want to be an anarchist, of course, until somebody comes and takes my property. $3.23 trillion revealed by that audit, as we did to bail out the financial industry. There's a portion of TARP money that has been set aside, that's already been accounted for. It's not extra money that needs to be approved. Set aside for the hardest hit fund. 19 of those states received that hardest hit fund. The money's available to them. It's already been accounted for, essentially. The states want to use some of those funds to assist legal aid groups. Remember we talked to Matt Taibbi about this, right? They have these foreclosure mills. They bring in a retired judge. He sits in a room. The only time these fraudulent mortgage holders are called to account is when there's an actual lawyer in the room representing the family that's being foreclosed upon and says, hey, you guys don't even own the note. It's the only time that these foreclosure mills administered by counties or states actually function in the way that they should to catch these liars is when there's an attorney there. So some of these states want to use this TARP fund, the hardest hit fund, again, earmarked via TARP, to assist legal aid groups. And the Treasury's like, well, I don't know if we can do that. I don't know if that money is legal to do that. Right? As if there's any oversight over any of this other money. So they solicited the opinion of an outside law firm, Squire Saunders & Dempsey, whose clients include massive mortgage holders, CNG Financial Corp, BBB&T Corporation. Essentially people who will be sitting across from these legal aid attorneys. Now, remember, TARP granted the Treasury Secretary, quote, unquote, extraordinary powers to protect people's home values, preserve home ownership, and promote economic growth. But this outside law firm, believe it or not, said, no, TARP can't be used for that. Can't be used to protect homeowners' rights. So Marcy Kaptur, who is an Ohio congresswoman, and I think it's Sherrod Brown, have co-sponsored a bill, H.R. 5510 and Senate Bill 3979, that would allow Treasury to release these funds. But, you know, obviously it's not even going to be brought up with the Republican Congress, or it won't be acted upon. And by that point, if it ever gets through the system, all these people have lost their homes anyways to this fraud. Am I a little angry today? Am I coming off as a little angry today? Just a hair? I got to lighten up. I guess it's hump day. When I get over the hump, folks, we'll be happy again. Everything will be fine.
High on a hill was a lonely goat herd, lay, hoodlay, hoodlay, hoo-hoo. Loud was the voice of the lonely goat herd, lay, hoodlay, hoodloo.
Oh, holy, holy, oh, trying to look through my stack here. Seems like I ain't good news. I'm going to have to start reading like People Magazine or something. Is there any good news on the... No. Any good TV shows re-upped? Oh, I know!
You know what? Hey, actually...
Survivor's on tonight. That's good.
That is very good to know that it's still on. There was something that was really funny last night on the late night shows. Jimmy Fallon.
Yes?
He did John Bonair. doing a press conference, and he got choked up at everything that he was talking about. They asked him about the Real Housewives of New Jersey, and he got choked up.
That's pretty funny.
It was great. I suggest everybody go check it out.
That's pretty funny. We should post that. Oh, and there's actually a pretty funny did you get that cartoon?
I'm posting it to Tumblr right now. I was going to ask you, who do we give the shout-out for that?
Oh, I think that's Noki.
Noki? Cool.
Yes. Noki sent a pretty funny one of those animated videos. Did you catch the line about Lionel in that?
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Noki was a famous tormentor of Lionel's. Gosh. I don't have time for this story. I'll get to it. But apparently we're arguably, arguably torturing Bradley Manning. Because he was convicted of espionage. Sorry. He was not convicted of anything. He's accused of espionage. I'm sorry. But he's been basically left in solitary confinement without a pillow or a blanket for 7 straight months. Seeing the outside of that cell for 1 hour a day, 7 days a week, for 7 straight months. What the fuck? I mean, even if you were a person who thought, like, this guy, I understand he hasn't been convicted yet, but he's, you know, confessed to doing it, so he should be, what? Tortured? Jesus, do him a favor, just kill him! We'll talk about it more. You know, because I've been reading, Glenn Greenwald has a huge piece on it. Go over there and read it. Or, I'll bring it up tomorrow. But, you know, it's not a guy who, unlike any other spy that we've had in the past, I mean, we've had some pretty big spies, right? This guy's not a spy. I mean, I don't know if he's a whistleblower by a very narrow definition. But this is not a guy who went and sold. He had access to stuff I'm sure he could have sold. Not interested in doing that. This is a guy who had a very specific response to what he did as a military officer, as a military intelligence, not officer, but he was a private, and decided that there was a fundamental problem with our government. But I'm trying to think of what you need to do to essentially be locked in a solitary confinement, when you obviously represent no danger to anybody physically. I mean, this is not like, you know, this is not the, what was that guy's name? It's the Clarice.
Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, this is not Hannibal Lecter. This is some 23-year-old kid who now apparently, you know, they've got him on antidepressants so that his mind doesn't crack. It really is. We definitely need an entertainment section, I think, of this show. Something like a little bit more. It's a little lighter. Right? I mean, let's just try this one more time.
High on the hill was a lonely goat herd. Lay, hoodlay, hoodlay, hoo-hoo. Now it was the voice of the lonely goat herd.
The funniest part we read today was that Henry Kissinger thought it was okay to gas Jews. That was the funny part of our show today. You understand? That the funny part of our show today, the comedy bit, was about Henry Kissinger saying it's okay to gas Jews. The probably most esteemed statesman we have in this country.
Men drinking beer with a foam of
fluid. Humanitarian concern. Let's see. Yeah, President Nixon, is there such a word as called Jumanitarian concern? Because it's almost definitely a Jumanitarian concern to gas juice. But a humanitarian, I don't know, maybe. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. Yeah, some days are going to be a little happier than others, folks. Come on. Stick with me. We'll ride this thing all the way down. You'll be hearing dispatches from me. I'll be, if we keep this up for the next 10, 15 years at this rate, we'll be doing this all by photocopy. I'll be taping a photocopy of what I would say that day on the podcast under some, like, mailbox on a certain street. There'll be a whole network of people. You guys will have to all figure out. You'll be sending codes to each other with emails.
That actually sounds really cool.
No, it's...
Yeah, I'm into that, Seth.
Yeah, I mean, if you think setting this whole thing up, just doing a PayPal is complicated. The way they'll have mimeograph machines on lockdown. I'm sorry, sir. We're going to have to see your Social Security number if you want to buy that printer ink. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, folks. Please, if you can, become a member. Where else can you get this type of happy-go-lucky talk? What?
I was going to say, if you want to, go ahead and check out the Majority Reporter's Tumblr blog.
Oh, yeah. We got some great stuff on there. And you can just go to majority.fm, and then up it says Majority Reporters on the banner up there. And so check it out there. And also justcoffee.coop. That's where you get great coffee, great chocolate, great hot chocolate, great teas, all 10% discount. Majority, use the majority as the coupon code. Listen to the show on Stitcher. But hey, listen, do me a favor. Go and download this show and subscribe through iTunes. It makes a big difference to our potential sponsors if we can tell them that we have, you know, thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon tens of thousands of people who are going through iTunes, because that's the best measure. We have many different metrics, but that's a really important metric. So subscribe through there, and, you know, still listen through Stitchers, too, is also great. All right. Stick around for the post-show show. Still available to everyone. You can IM me at Cedar MVS, Majority FM, Sam Cedar Show. We'll be right back. How do you spell gnocchi?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you just
it's
said...
It's like the pasta.
Got it. I thought you said gnocchi.
Yeah, I didn't say it with the affectation. Gnocchi.
Got it.
Gnocchi.
Are they also going by the Schlock Doctrine? Is that the same person?
I don't know. It's possible.
That's who put the video up and followed us on... They're following us on Tumblr, so...
Nah! Oh, really? Interesting, because I didn't know that they were following us on Tumblr. I don't know. I don't know, you know, I guess credit it to the Tumblr guy. Say that there's word that I thought it was gnocchi, but maybe it wasn't.
Okay.
I'm not being cagey about this. I'm not afraid, let's say, that Lionel is going to come after me.
Well, good, because it's on Facebook, too.
Oh, God, no, not Facebook. What if Lionel defriends me? Oh. Wow, I got into a mood early today and then didn't let go of it. Nefertiti, good morning, Sammy, Dorsey, and Evan. So I got it right yesterday, yes? I think Nefer's trying to... I mentioned yesterday I'm going to have some news in the next couple of days. And it's not, you know, it's not earth-shattering, but it's pretty exciting. Are you guys pretty excited about it?
I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, it's good. It's going to be very good for this show. It's like a super win-win, and that never happens.
But no, never. I don't think you got it right. Kissinger should have his foreskin stapled back on while he's still awake. Neffer says, I love the smell of fresh mimeograph in the morning. Don't be a putz. You know that move you do when you rhetorically tilt your head with a quizzical look on your face? Did you pick that up from Sarah Silverman, or did she pick it up from you? It's actually a very rabbi-like way of speaking, Sam. You could have been a Talmudic scholar. Well, that could be a religious thing, but yes, Sarah picked up all her quirks from me. Speaking of the filibuster and Senate rules, Gary Kroger, Miami University poli sci, who's written a book about the history of the Senate rules, says that any filibuster could be instantly broke by simply suspending the rules. Yes, that's true. That's the nuclear weapon. You'd need to override the parliamentarian, but yes. The reason Speaker can bring up to suspend the rules is an instance where the minority is being... Harry Reid pretends like he's powerless, but he's not. But Reid still has his job. Russ Feingold doesn't. Correct. Right. I mean, at the end of the day, look, you know, there's another group that's at fault here. The fucking American public. I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I used to get in arguments with Janine about this all the time. And Janine would find it appalling that people were uninformed and they should do more and et cetera, et cetera. She could not understand it. And, you know, I think it's very hard for people who are single, let's say, or, you know, don't have children. Being an actor is not a bad life. It's not a bad life. You work like very intensely for a short bit, and then you have like a long time to like pursue stuff. And we would have arguments about this on air. I'm not. There was no argument that Janine and Ever and I ever had that was not on air. I don't even know if we ever argued off air. You know, people are like, "Wow, are you friends?" No, we're better friends. It's just when we get on air that we have fights. But with that said, I don't judge people for not getting involved. They should, obviously. It's in their best interest, too. It's in their children's best interest, too. I can understand why people, but what really drives me crazy is when people act on their ignorance. That's the scary part. You know, like that lady in that Beck video that I posted. I'm here protesting. She's traveled now 100 miles. I'm here protesting that we're not living the actual Constitution. Oh, really? And the part about, you know, God and the government not being together, that's also bad. You know, that sort of is derived from the Constitution. Well, to be honest, I've never read the Constitution, but I'm going to take a course on it in October. So you have driven 100 miles to protest something that you... within the same breath, admit to me that you don't know anything about. Like, that lady, honestly, you know, somebody else said, we should outlaw bills that are over 100 pages. That lady should be outlawed. That lady should not be allowed, without court permission, to protest anything unless she has proven once that she knows, that she's even bothered to say, you know, like, if she's like, I've researched the Constitution, I've gone back, I've read it, I disagree with the court's interpretation of this. Okay, fine, you're nut job, and we disagree. But at least you've put in the slightest bit of work. And meanwhile, I got to jump hoops with PayPal, even though they have my bank account number. What more do you want? Jump hoops with the bank, and then I got to jump hoops with PayPal. Pretty soon I'm going to have like some type of key of Mordor to open up my fucking web browser. I'm in a mood today. I spend an hour and a half. Note to self, don't spend an hour and a half on the phone trying to...
Try to do business post-show.
Right. I'm happy now. I love your metaphors and analogies. Best chance to pull up the piano up the stairs.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I'm happy now. Do you do therapy over, you know, like online therapy? Because I'm going to need this. Majority follower. This year, my brother just got out of federal prison. While he was in there, it became a huge eye-opener how the penitentiary system has become a front to provide cheap labor to corporations. Yes. Actually, I just saw a story on this. In Georgia or something. While the Unicorps had only had to pay the inmates 20 cents an hour for labor with no benefits, our family was forced, was supporting my brother financially and purchasing overpriced cheap clothes and food. I'd really like financial sponsor to show which to address. I would really like to financial sponsor a show which addresses this. Have you ever thought of dedicated some time and interest in this corporation and penal system? I literally saw this story today, and I will dig it up. I mean, don't. I don't like to tie in my sponsorship of the show to something I wouldn't do. So, you know, you decide if you like the show down the road. You know, that I don't want to get into that. That relationship. But it's an issue I'm interested in. And we'll get to it. You know, I mean, you know, here's the thing is that, like, fundamentally, I am still trying to figure out what the show is. I'm trying to find out, you know, the on radio, when I was on Air America, our audience is quite large right now. I mean, and certainly ahead of where I projected it would be, but it's quite large, you know, relative to, you know, standing on a soapbox in Union Square or something, or, you know, it's, or even having a blog. But it's not what radio was. And while TV tends to be even a fraction of radio a lot of times, it's a different type of medium because people listen to the entire thing. You know, radio, a lot of people who listen to me on radio, they didn't listen to me more than, you know, 15 minutes at a time. I'm in the car, blick, you know, you could be a huge fan of mine, never heard an entire show. This, I think, people listen to the majority of the content. It's a different animal. And in terms of, like, the influence that what I say has on the political discourse from this desk, from this platform, isn't necessarily the way it was for the radio program. But it's different. It's just a different, it's a different animal. You know, because I have guests on and I turn them on to issues that they have a larger platform, or you people go out and disseminate this information, have a better understanding of it than you would maybe if I was doing the show on radio. I mean, there's a whole a lot of different things that I'm still figuring out. And so the medium and the size of the audience, and as the size of the audience grows, it may change what topics I think are relevant or not relevant. As we take phone calls, as we start to lure conservatives here, that may become more relevant. And I balance this out with, if I have opportunities, you know, I'll go and do Parker Spitzer, or I'll go and do Olbermann or Rattigan, and I'll do it on topics that I would not contemplate talking about on this show because it's a different audience. It's a larger audience. It's a gateway audience in some respects. And if I do other projects that may be announced shortly, it may give me a bigger platform or a different platform. I'll have different types of guests and talk about different things there. And, you know, it's an entire tapestry. I'm not sure what I was responding to. I don't even know why I said any of that. Espanol, that's awesome. Me too, via Rosetta Stone and annual visits to Puerto Vallarta. Harold, do you find that Rosetta Stone is good? Because I've been contemplating something like that because because I need to learn Spanish so I can talk to my sister. Did you really say the Anti-Defamation League defamed an entire religion? Finally, something we disagree on, says Superfunk. Let's say they did. I don't think they did, but let's say that you're right. Don't some things deserve to be defamed? How about the KKK, the Nazis? Tea Party libertarians, nut jobs. North Korea. How about a cultural institutions that enshrine domestic abuse? Why is Islam off limits for criticism? Can you understand and accept the distinction between saying Muslims have a right to build a mosque while at the same time disagreeing with the building of it? Can you understand and accept the distinction between saying the Muslims have a right to build a mosque while at the same time disagreeing with the building of it?
Well, sure. Yes. I don't think you should build this mosque here because it's going to create traffic and it's going to become a safety hazard. It should be built back over there. I don't think you should build this mosque here because it's zoned not for religious institutions. I don't think you should build this mosque here because this is... Well, let me put it this way. It's very hard for me to imagine a scenario where I would have a problem with building a mosque, and the reason why I would have that problem would have anything would be any different than I would with building a synagogue or a church. Let me put it that way. I'm trying to think of like. You know, at least in America. Okay? And maybe there's an instance where I can't think of one, but I can tell you this, that I've been to that location where the mosque is. I've been to Ground Zero, this hallowed ground where we won't even fucking pay for these guys who can barely breathe now, who got black lungs because of it. So-called hallowed ground where we're good. What are we going to build on there? A TGIF? No, I thought what the ADL did was despicable. It was despicable. Because if they really felt that way, what you're suggesting, Superfunk, that they thought it was the right of the mosque to be built there, but that thought it was sort of inappropriate. Here's what you do when you're the Anti-Defamation League. You say nothing. You don't come out in support of it, and you do not go out and give cover for right-wing nut jobs to carry on their hatred. You say nothing. And he knew exactly what he was doing. So, I mean, if you want to tell me, like, all religion is bunk, fine. I got no problem with that. You want to criticize Islam? In a some type of theological context or in some type of religious studies critique, God bless. We can do it all day. I love talking that shit. That's what I studied when I was in college. Yeah, we could talk about late antiquity and how, I'm open to all of that shit from an academic standpoint. But the ADL is a political entity that went out and gave cover to shit on Muslims. And there was nothing legitimate. I'm sorry. Listen, if it upsets you, if you're if your loved one died in the Twin Towers, you have every right to say, I don't like the idea of anything to do with Muslim there because it reminds me of what happened there. Fine. But here's the beauty. You can go down to 9/11, you can never see that building. But if you're a Muslim and you die and your loved one died in that family, which 300 of them did, and you want to say, well, George Bush was a Christian. He heard the terrorists were about to hijack a plane. He allowed, he didn't lock down like he should have. I'm going to blame all Christians for this. Or when they killed Tiller,
when the Christians killed Tiller, when the Christians, when the Christian religion forced its adherents to kill Tiller, to assassinate him. When the Christian religion bred that guy, I can't remember his name now, who went through and bombed all those places in the 90s. Bombed the lesbian bar, bombed the... I don't want to see any churches. It's just absurd. Superfunk, you need to look at research polls as far as Muslim sentiment around the world. You'll find that what you think is an extremist views, let's say support for terrorist attacks on innocent civilians, are actually widespread among so-called moderates and are majority positions in many Islamic societies, including Western nations like the UK and France. It doesn't matter. It's not a function of Islam. It's not a function of a mosque. For the record, I'm not Jewish or right-wing. I just break hard from the left when it comes to the problem of Islam. Highly critical of all religions. Well, I have no problem with you being critical of all religions. But, I mean, if you want to argue that there shouldn't have been a mosque there, you necessarily need to argue there shouldn't be a church or a synagogue there either. You don't think that the deprivation of human rights that's going on in Israel of the Palestinian people is not a function of their religion? They're not doing it in the name of maintaining the Jewish identity of Israel? They're not doing it because the hardest extremist elements of Israel are Orthodox Jews, are fundamentalists? How about a KKK museum? Do I have a problem with that? No. I mean, do I think the KKK has a right to build a museum? Off the top of my head, no. Do I think that's the same as building a house of worship? No, because we give more leeway to religious institutions in this country. But fundamentally, do I have a problem with the KKK building a museum next to a Holocaust museum? I'm not particularly offended by that? No. The doctrines of Islam are anti-human rights. I mean, look, I'm not Muslim. When Malcolm X went to Mecca, he came back and had a very different notion of what Islam was than what you say it is. I can find you somebody who's a Christian who says, Jesus didn't say turn the other cheek. He said, pick up the sword. Okay, several dozen Muslims were killed, not 300. Big fucking deal. What difference does that make? Where's the cutoff line? Where's the cutoff line? Look, if you want to indict all religions, I got no problem with that. You can make the same thing indictment about nationalism. You can make the same indictment about consumerism so that you and I can get our computers. Some 12-year-old Chinese kid is having to work 14 hours a day. That's not exactly pro-human rights either. But if Islam was as evil as those YouTube videos would lead us to believe, guess what? We'd all be dead right now. It wouldn't be too hard to organize 1.5 billion people who are all on the same page to fuck us up pretty bad. And what have they done existentially to us? Do I agree with the way women are treated in Saudi Arabia? No. Do I agree with the way Palestinians are treated in Israel? No. Do I agree with the way women are treated in African nations? No. Shit, the one country that we invaded and occupied was probably the most progressive in terms of women's rights in the entire fucking region. So, you know, you can't cherry pick these things. Who knows? We might have a different global Muslim perspective on the 9/11 attacks if 330 were killed as opposed to three dozen. I got news for you. If 1,000 Muslims were killed, we wouldn't have a different perspective on it. I absolutely agree, Kyle. Why don't we have a conversation about the attacks on people and property in the name of Christians? Yes, exactly, Hyperphil. How much of TARP was paid back using low-interest notes to the banks from the Treasury? My guess would be most of it. Second batch of arms at 5 years happens in 2011-12. I mean, one would hope that most people would have been able to get out of their loans. But the problem is, of course, is that so many of those loans are underwater that they can't refi. Rudolph, thank you, Hyperphil. It was right. Rudolph was the bomber, the Christian bomber. Drathmaze, I wonder if anyone has ever told you that your usage of the Sound of Music is similar to that of Arundhati Roy in God of Small Things. She contrasts happy childhood memories going to see the film in theaters with the political turmoil of contemporary India. I didn't know that. We interviewed her. Look for Arundhati Roy. You know, like, the idea that those documents that are in that fucking folder that we have, like, I have got documents like this big, are not digitized. You know, it's, I mean, that's the thing. And dudes, gentlemen, this is how you guys need to think. Kyle?
Hmm? How do you spell this person's name?
What?
Warren or Arun?
Arun. Arundhati Roy.
Arundhati Roy. No, this is how you guys need to think. You need to think in terms of, like, setting up processes that are going to be necessary down the road to access that are going to make it easier.
Yeah, like 5,000 interns to read all of this, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, so we need to be working out a system right now that is better than we have. Like, you know, like all the contacts that, you know, we have for this is, folks, if you're on the Sammy Cam. This is our guest contact ledger right here. You're looking at it. This pile of stick-it, or what are these called?
Post-its. I've got a couple over here.
Literally, that's it. I didn't know that. But Arundhati Roy, she's fantastic. We gotta pull that from the original Majority Report. Good thing to clarify. Stitchers is from when you're away from your computer and haven't synced and want to hear the latest episode. iTunes is to subscribe to all the episodes and stay synced up at home. Crystal Count. Thank you. Yes, please. iTunes, very important. Yankees are going down. Spurned by Cliff Lee. Go Sox. Yes! Thank you, Evil Empire is dead. Pluger! I understand the desire to address the Republicans' abuse of filibuster. What happens if the Democrats fall into the minority in 2013? ABC poll says the public trusts Republicans in Congress over Obama in handling the federal budget deficit. Well, I don't blame the American public for that, because Obama has not made any explanation beyond parroting what the Republicans are saying. Honestly, what has he said different than the Republicans? What has he done different than the Republicans? Nothing. He buys into their frame and just follows them along. What happens when the Democrats fall into the minority in 2013? First of all, the Democrats barely use the filibuster anyways. And you'll still be able to filibuster. It'd be much harder to do. And at the end of the day, the filibuster has always been used far more to stop progressive change than not. Because, and this is a perfect example. So I'm not worried. It makes it more democratic. And it makes the way the Senate should be. So I'm not worried at the end of the day. Not building the Park 51 Community Center because it would be an Islamic center too close to the World Trade Center site would enshrine the ignorant anti-Islamic generations prevalent since the attacks. What is the essence of bigotry if not ignorant generalization by race, creed, etc.? Exactly, Pluger. Dactyl, I'm so incredibly infuriated by Obama, the scam called Hope that many, including myself, fell for. I can't take Obama disseminating the lie about Social Security. He knows it's a lie. He's not stupid. It's like Bush rumblings concerning Saddam and weapons of mass destruction. If FDR were alive, he would smack Obama in his crutch. With his crutch. Well, if FDR were alive, to be fair, he probably wouldn't need a crutch at this point. Because he would have some type of superpowers. Obama needs to announce himself as a one-term president. You know, if he doesn't, we need to think of primarying his capitulating ass. But I'm really starting to think the system doesn't matter. Whom we run the system so corrupted by money that nothing short of a revolution will fix it. Well, it's a question we're going to talk about over the next several months on this program. I mean, that's, you know, one of the things that we can do on this program that I like about the fact that it's not, you know, 1.3 million people listening at any given time and that I don't have program directors to deal with it. Seems as if the corporate media decides they're for something, the polls pretty much go in that direction, and then the Democrats cave. I think that's true, Spayef. Polling, I think, very often reflects what people are hearing about any given topic, and if they're hearing only one thing about it, that's the way the polling's going to be reflected. I mean, I'm sorry. Take a poll. What are the implications of cutting... Two implications of cutting of a payroll tax for Social Security. And the answers you'll get will be, and well, they should be. Your average Joe on the street should not have to be spending his time reading 35 different perspectives on this tax deal to find out, to piece together the real danger to Social Security that this deal represents. Frankly, that's my job. That's my job. But it's also the job of other commentators out there who have a wider platform. And they don't exercise that job. Kevin Semicolon, I just listened to your What the Fuck episode. This is the Marc Maron podcast. What was your favorite part of Break Room Live? The time when Maron was on the road? That's my guess. I can't remember what we talked about on that podcast on what the F. But yeah, no, Maron and I had a tough time of it because he wanted the show to be one way, and you know, he felt bound to do politics at Air America. You know, like I would have rolled with it anyway. You know, I have no problem the show being about, you know, I can interview comics, not like he can. I mean, he really, you know, he really spends time, you know, studying comedy and been immersed in it and was a fan of comedy in a way that even though I was a comedian for a long time and still make a little money by doing straight comedy, that I wasn't. And frankly, when we teamed up, my understanding was like, look, I'm obsessed with politics. You're obsessed with you and how that relates to society. And, you know, I was always a huge fan of his. I mean, he knew that. That's how we met. It's how you become good friends with Maron. And I think the need to do politics and follow the news was just not enjoyable. And, you know, part of the reason why I left the show and just sort of was because there was still an opportunity, at least in my mind, and it was originally his show. I mean, I was brought on, not when it launched, but I'm saying he it was his deal and he brought me on. And I was like, look, you know, you have a couple months to make the show what you want to make it. But I think he also didn't to realize that, you know, you're not going to do just an all comedy show at Air America. Why? Why would you? It's just not, that's, you know, you do comedy in service of politics. And so, you know, he had such far greater success, literally 3 weeks after, you know, leaving Air America, after it closed or whatever it was. So, no, I mean, I had fun doing the show. It's just that the times it got, it didn't work for all of us. What's going on here? Why is my... one of those days. Dane Cook, the man. Franken Caves, Sherrod Brown Caves, I'm depressed. I'm going to go listen to Mark Maron's podcast and become severely depressed. I was bummed about Franken. He wrote a letter, basically, very frankly, said it was a very tough vote, blah, blah, blah. I just don't understand why he can't vote against it. I mean, you know, when you know it's going to pass at that point, you're like, you know, he looks and sees what happened to Russ Feingold. You know, I mean, I don't know. Why does Udall insist on calling changing the Senate filibuster the constitutional option? That was Bill Frist's do-over after he called. Exactly. Well, if you really want to change it, then call it that. I don't know. Does this mysterious announcement have anything to do with Palin's Alaska? No. Not my original thought. All Americans should abhor the notion that there's even a single address in the U.S. where the First Amendment does not apply. I agree with that, Sammy Cameron. Viv Pervisor, internet brainwashed conservative, posted this. Real, not intended comedy. Gays and military distraction. I don't want to lose any Marines to distraction, Amos said. I don't want to have any Marines that I'm visiting at Bethesda with no legs be the result of any type of distraction. Well, then you know what you should do. You should probably just get single heterosexual males who don't have boyfriend, don't have girlfriends at home, so they don't get letters and don't get distracted. Right? I mean, in this guy's world, this is how it goes. Oh my God! Oh my God! There's people shooting at us. Oh, but. Gosh, you have, I love the way that you hold that machine gun. Oh, bang, bang, I'm dead. That's the conservative worldview of what happens in a foxhole with a gay man. Is it only me that's not getting sound on the Sammy Cam, even in the post show? Says Todd Slater.
Let me jiggle a couple of cables. All right, that should do it.
Mirella says, Rosetta Stone is good, at least with the Italian. Can't we protect or fight for civil rights in our country here? These people are saying that Muslims do not have civil rights respect. Big Ed Schlitz, American Lionel's an American treasure. He'd be a million times better at cartoon voiceover work than John Benjamin. Kevin 11. I wonder how things would have turned out if Bill Clinton would have pitched health care reform, the stimulus plan for Obama in the past 2 years. Here's a deficit-cutting measure. Start taxing religions. Why should they get taxed and amnesty? I think there's a good argument for that. I mean, the problem is it gets complicated with the establishment of religion, and once you interfere with that fear, it opens up the door on the other side. But Jesus did say so, quote, I come not to bring peace, but to bring a sword, Matthew 10:34. Thank you, David. You know who believes that? Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity quoted that to Janine when they had lunch once. When Janine's like, you're so religious. How can you? Jesus said, bring the sword. Now, you know, if you're a Christian scholar, you would argue that Jesus was talking about the sword of truth. But Christianity is an evil religion. This is when I put on my YouTube with it's all just graphics. And all right, we've gone over. Well, let me race through these because I feel bad. Christian zealots are the ones paying for the praying for the apocalypse. Isn't that anti-human rights? Lionel's the most underappreciated radio talent to come along, Mr. Mark Green. Hillary should have been president. Day-Day Frew, give them fucking hell, Sammy. Necker from, there's more Catholic priests who have molested children than there are Muslims who flew planes into that building, and we still let Catholic churches have schools. I couldn't have said it better. I mean, honestly, the percentage of Catholic priests who have molested children relative to the whole subset of the whole set of Catholic priests versus Muslims to, I mean, modern, I'm sorry, it's not even remotely close. So at what point do you say a primary challenger would be a good idea? Is there a reason to think Obama, the capitulator, would roll over and announce he's not running? Narcotur, no. Now, forgive me, because my thought process in this is not as developed as I would like. But I think the value of a primary challenger would be twofold. One is to promote a progressive agenda and to build a progressive movement. Will not beat Obama in a race. But to build a progressive movement, and then, frankly, to open the door to someone in the general election, if someone, let's say, like Palin is the nominee, I would be more circumspect if there was another nominee that I felt that could win, probably just as equally dangerous as Palin, but one that could win, to this strategy. And, you know, I'm just spitballing here, but... the idea would be to help build a progressive movement and to maybe open the door for someone who shares Obama's policies but is not a Democrat, so as to save the brand. You know, that's my thinking right now. Do I think that it would force Obama to the left? Well, we've seen he has the ability to move to the left rhetorically. Do I believe it would convince him not to run? Highly unlikely. It's just not, you know, it just doesn't work that way. Unless it was someone like, I don't know. I don't know who could run against him, frankly, successfully. I don't know that there is anybody. Any chance of getting Sam Cedar to air on Free Speech TV Network? I like watching Hartman and Laura Flanders on there. I guess it's not, you know, completely inconceivable, but I think we'd probably need a little time before that happens. The only way I would do that with this show is if, like, it could be a radio show that's on air. You know, not a TV show. I'm just not interested in that level of artifice, frankly. I'm very Evan By Hoover, I'm very proud of Obama's leadership style. If Bob Rubin believes it, you do too. Robert Rubin's head, I'm very proud of Peter Orszag, going for a great corporate, working for a corporation. Smitty, is this mysterious announcement having to do with you? Not going to read the rest of that. Missed today's show, so sorry if you already addressed this, but do you buy Senator Al Franken's excuse him voting yes for the tax deal? I'm sure that if there was any chance that he thought he had of defeating it, he would have voted against it. You know, do I cut Al more slack than I would somebody else? Perhaps. Or Sherrod Brown more slack than somebody else, perhaps. I know they would have voted against it if they thought it was even remotely close. But, you know, they look and see what happened to Russ Feingold, and they don't want to be on the losing end of that for a vote that they can't affect the outcome. I don't know. Maybe that's the problem. Dan Cook, the man, you can announce we're working with Lionel. Let's see. I think that's everybody. Let's see. Read Sam Harris. Here he is on your buddy's Lawrence's show. Well, yes, Sam Harris. Is he the one? He has a problem with all religion. Yes. I have no problem with having a problem with all religion. It's not the issue. The issue isn't that religion is bad, that's why there shouldn't be an Islamic center two blocks from 9/11. That argument doesn't make any sense. You want to take out all the churches, all the synagogues within a 2-mile radius of 9/11 and do it equally? All right, I'm more sympathetic to that argument. I don't understand it necessarily. Maybe you're saying religion is bad for the world and this is what you get. Okay, I'm more willing to buy that. I'm not the argument that there shouldn't be a mosque there is not an argument against the validity of religion. It is an argument that one particular religion is fundamentally not worthy of the same rights that other religions in this country are. And that's a different argument. Am I making an equivalence argument between the downsides of religions? They are all equally good, bad? Yes. Yes, indeed, I am. I think fundamentalism of all religions is extremely dangerous. Is extremely dangerous. Do I think people should have the right to practice their religion? Yes. What do you mean, not rights? It's not about the right to build it. No one's saying Muslims don't have the right. Listen, I can tell you that you have the right to go to any... There's great examples of what you're trying to argue. You want to say they shouldn't do it? Fine. But if you want to prevent them from exercising their right, it is as if you are stripping their rights away. Is it okay for people to protest outside there? Sure. And it's just as right for me to say they're a bunch of douchebags. It's okay for people to protest outside of an abortion clinic, too. But it is about the right. It is about allowing them to practice the right. Do I find it particularly ridiculous? Look, am I more sympathetic to people who are protesting the building of a KKK museum? Yes, I agree that KKK is bad. Do I think Muslim centers are necessarily prima facie bad like I think KKK museums are? No. No. That's it. If it's just about taste, we can end the conversation by just saying, you don't like Muslims and think it's the thing, you know, they're particularly bad. And I don't give a shit, because I don't think that's the case. Because all evidence is to the contrary, despite what some fucking guy in Denmark puts on his YouTube account, or whatever it is. And frankly, even if I was to agree with you, the idea that this building is to build bridges with other religions, if that's the goal, it fails and public sentiment is against building a mosque there. Well, I got news for you, Chief. I don't know where you live, Superfunk, but in Manhattan, in its community, nobody gives a shit. They all think it should be built. So here's what I would say to you. Stay out of it. Go deal with your own backyard. In Manhattan, in the community, in the local community, people are for the mosque. That ends your discussion. Philly! Well, don't make me come around there and tell you what to do with your cheesesteaks. All right, folks. I got to go. It was a good conversation. I enjoyed it. We'll see you tomorrow. Sorry for eating up the megabytes on your pod. I got to be more. You're welcome, Superfunk. Thank you. I gotta be more disciplined. Maybe I need to have an appointment afterwards. What? Doris is just trying to justify his own mind at this point. All right, talk to you later, folks. But the meds are gonna kick in my pilot.